western city of Homs. The Syrian Defense Ministry says the army is present in Homs and its countryside and is deployed on fixed and solid defensive lines. It added that the army has been reinforced with huge additional forces. Earlier, the Syrian army targeted the positions of the armed groups in the Talbisa region north of Homs. The army also said it struck the armed group's convoys and gatherings in the northern and southern Hama countryside. It said the attacks were carried out by artillery weapons and Syrian-Russian warplanes. The army added that dozens of militants were killed and wounded in the attacks, and several of their vehicles were destroyed. From the Iraqi capital Baghdad, trilateral meeting between the foreign ministers of Iran, Iraq, and Syria had convened earlier today to discuss the ongoing crisis in Syria. The meeting included the Iraqi foreign minister, Fuad Hossein, Iranian foreign minister, Mr. Abbas Araghchi, who's just speaking now, and the Syrian foreign minister, Bassam Sabbagh. Let's quickly go over what was just said in summation. The Iraqi foreign minister condemned the Syrian armed opposition's attacks in the Arab country, and he also vowed support for the Syrian people and government. The Syrian foreign minister, for his part, said the situation in Syria will affect the entire West Asia region, and Iranian foreign minister Abbas Araghchi described the attacks on Syria as a U.S.-Israeli plot. Ibrahim Wahdi is joining us now from the Syrian capital, Damascus, to bring us up to speed on all the latest developments with regards to the latest resurgence of violence in Syria. Ibrahim, what do you have to share with us at this point?
Yes, Bardia. I'm currently in Damascus, where the life is normal and everything is quiet. And contrary to what the terrorist groups' media outlets and some media outlets affiliated with them has been spreading lately, that there was an attack on Damascus, there's a coup in Damascus, there's all that lies. Today, the Ministry of Defense said that the terrorist groups has been posting and publishing videos fabricated, shows that the General Staff Headquarters was under attack. I saw the video. It was an old one from, I think, 2016, 2017, when the terrorists were back then, or the terrorists were literally next to Damascus. But now Damascus is completely safe and secure, nothing here in Damascus. As for Homs, where the Syrian Arab Army had to implement or conduct a strategic redeployment from Hama to Homs in order to save lives, as the Minister of Defense himself explained lately in a televised statement, the current situation that the army repositioned all the on the front line, on a new front line from the northeast of Homs countryside in town Dar Kabira to the northern Homs countryside Al Mukhtariya, all the way to northeastern Homs countryside to Al San. The Syrian forces, according to the Ministry of Defense, also are still in their positions, conducting their duties to defend the country, to defend Homs itself. And the voices, the loud explosions heard in Homs currently are resulted from the artillery and missile launchers which are attacking the terrorist positions in Homs northern countryside and all the way to Idlib, along with the Russian and Syrian warplanes, who have been carrying out devastating airstrikes that are targeting the chain supply of the terrorists, their headquarters. And today they destroyed headquarters of the operating team of the terrorist drones, while also the Syrian air defenses managed to shoot down many terrorist drones over Homs today. Also, the timing here is really important. Some of the militants, some of the terrorists, had made some moves in the southern region in Daraa, which was expected. But the timing is critical because currently they know that the snowball that begun from Idlib and grown step by step until it reached Hama and stopped for a while and then reached now to Homs countryside, now has stopped and will face fierce defense from the Syrian Arab Army. So obviously the Israelis and the Americans instructed their elements there, their proxies there in the southern region to move, while the situation in Deir ez-Zor is completely settled now, is still the same. No one withdrew from Deir ez-Zor also, and on the contrary to what the terrorist media outlets are saying. And also, as I said again, in Damascus, it's all clear, it's all safe. The terrorists have been saying that the fall of Damascus will be in a matter of hours and all that. We confirm that all this are lies. Meanwhile, the Syrian foreign minister has been to Baghdad. There was a conference. He met the also the Iraqi foreign minister, the Iranian foreign minister there in Baghdad, and the prime minister of Iraq, Mr. Mohammed Shaya al-Sudani. And Iraq confirmed its support for Syria, as Syria considered a part of their national security. The stability of Syria, is important to the whole region.
Thanks a lot, Ibrahim Wahdi, joining us from the Syrian capital, Damascus. Iran has successfully launched an indigenous space tug into space aboard a homegrown satellite launch vehicle. Saman-1 was successfully sent into space from the Imam Khomeini Space Launch Terminal on Friday morning using a Seymour launcher. Seymour set a new record for the liftoff of payloads as it successfully placed the Saman-1 orbital transfer block and two other research payloads weighing nearly 300 kilograms. One of the payloads was Iranian Army's Fakhr-1 nanosatellite. It has been developed by experts from the Ministry of Defense's Iran Electronics Industries. Fakhr-1 communications satellite was named in honor of the martyred scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. Spokesman for Iran's Defense Ministry Space Division, Ahmad Hosseini Younes, says that Iran is expanding its knowledge of satellite carriers.
Its domestic capabilities, they had succeeded to achieve the full space cycle, and our country has succeeded completely based on its domestic capabilities and its scientists' know-how to achieve this technology. We were the ninth country that succeeded in launching our satellite with our own carrier, and we developed this capability such that the Seymour carrier and launcher in the world class. And as you saw, a payload of 300 kilograms was carried with a space tug. It was launched into orbit successfully. And this shows that we don't need the foreign science and know-how, and we can stand on our feet and by relying on domestic capabilities and technologies, both in terms of the satellite carriers and SLVs. We are expanding our knowledge and technology there. The Seymour launcher in the 500-kilometer orbit and is capable of carrying up to 500 kilograms. And then we will have the Sarir carrier and Sarush carrier to put them into orbit of 36,000 kilometers.
The Israeli military has struck two border crossings between Syria and Lebanon despite a ceasefire. Lebanese officials say the Israeli airstrikes targeted the Arida crossing on the Syrian side of the border and the Josea crossing in eastern Lebanon. The regime also bombed the Lebanese-Syrian border area in Syria's Al-Ghusair. The Israeli regime has repeatedly violated the ceasefire agreement in Lebanon that took effect on November the 27th. The truce came after more than 14 months of clashes between the Israeli army and the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah. Over 4,000 people were killed in Israeli attacks in Lebanon. Hadi Hotate is joining us now from South Lebanon with more updates on the violations of the ceasefire that is taking place by the Israeli regime on numerous occasions. Hadi, what do you have to share with us?
We just returned from South Lebanon. We were in the border area. We were in Bint Jbeil province in Majd El Salem village. It's a village that I was surprised. The whole village is destroyed. Basically, there was this village was suffered from mass destruction during the last 2 months of war due to the heavy Israeli airstrikes against the civilian buildings. Today, we had the opportunity to go there, basically because people of the Majd al-Salem village were having a funeral procession for the martyrs of the resistance. It was one of the biggest funerals I have ever attended here in Lebanon during last year. 23 Hezbollah martyrs were had their funeral procession today, and hundreds and maybe even thousands of people attended this ceremony in honor for the blood of those martyrs who defended South Lebanon and who were the reason why people are right now still able to come to their border village. It's a second line village, Majd al-Salem. We are not allowed to cross the area to reach more advanced village near the borders. For example, this village is right next to Talusa, right next to Merkaba, and to Mais al-Jabal, and to Hula, sorry, and to Mais al-Jabal. These areas witnessed the fiercest fighting in the combat and in the war, actually, especially during the last 2 to 3 weeks of the war. But the resistance was able to defend them. But right now, until now, we cannot go there because the Lebanese army is also making sure that people do not cross to the first line villages, because the Israelis are keeping they keep violating the ceasefire agreement daily. So, for example, when we were coming back from Majd al-Salem, actually about 1 hour ago, an Israeli drone targeted a civilian car that was heading from Bint Jbeil to Yaroun, which is a borderline village that witnessed the ambush, one of the most important ambushes that the resistance attacked the Israelis, and it caused the Israelis 6 killed soldiers immediately. They were killed on the spot. So a drone strike attacked a civilian car, but we were just updated that the driver had managed to escape from the car, and he should be fine, hopefully. The drone missed him, and also the Israelis are, of course, keeping their presence in some areas that are 100 meters away from the borders, and they are, in some areas like Shibaa, they are also keeping their presence to prohibit the Lebanese army, to deny the Lebanese army the access to their positions in the nearby areas in the on the borders, which is also a part and a necessity for this is a necessary part of the agreement of the ceasefire, that the Lebanese army will be deployed on the border.
All right, thanks a lot. Hadi Hotay joining us from South Lebanon. Israel's relentless air and artillery strikes continue to claim civilian lives and cause destruction across Gaza as the regime presses ahead with its genocidal war. Gaza's civil defense says nearly 30 Palestinians were killed after Israeli warplanes hit areas near Kamal Adwan Hospital in the north. Israel also bombed central Gaza's refugee camps. Reports say several Palestinians have been killed and injured in attacks on Al-Maqazi and Buraij camps in Deir al-Bala. Earlier on Friday, 4 doctors were killed at Kamal Adwan Hospital after Israeli forces struck and stormed the compound. The World Health Organization says the attack came with no prior warning. Hamas has called for an international committee to investigate Israel's deliberate targeting of hospitals and medical facilities across the Strip. The Israeli genocide in Gaza has killed over 44,600 people so far. Israeli forces have killed another Palestinian in the occupied West Bank as the regime's campaign of raid and abduction continues apace in the territory. The Palestinian man was fatally shot during heavy clashes that erupted as the regime's troopers stormed the Balata refugee camp near Nablus. He had recently been released from the Israeli prison. As the Israeli military convoy entered the refugee camp, it faced fierce resistance from Saray al-Quds, the armed wing of Palestinian Islamic Jihad. The group targeted the regime forces with heavy gunfire and explosive devices. Israeli troopers also stormed the town of Annapta, east of Tulkarm. They raided several houses and abducted four Palestinians during that raid. Over 730 Palestinians have been killed in the occupied West Bank since Israel began its genocidal war on Gaza in October of last year. An Israeli far-right minister has once again ordered preparations for the full annexation of the occupied West Bank. Bezalel Smotrich expressed hope that his expansionist push will gain support from U.S. President-elect Donald Trump when he takes office in January. We have more in this following report.
There seems to be no end to Israel's expansionism as the regime keeps on seizing more Palestinian land. On Thursday, Israeli Foreign Minister Bezalel Smotrich ordered preparations for the annexation of the entire West Bank. He said there's a great opportunity to annex the territory with Donald Trump in power in the U.S. Smotrich, who is also in charge of the occupied West Bank's affairs, told the regime's civil administration staff that he hopes to close the department as part of the annexation of the West Bank. The minister said he had spoken to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the Israeli ambassador to the U.S. about the matter. He also announced the confiscation of more than 2,300 hectares of Palestinian land to build new illegal settlements on an unprecedented scale, ignoring international law in the International Court of Justice's recent ruling that Israel's continued presence there is unlawful. The West Bank has been under Israeli occupation since 1967. Since then, Israeli settlements have expanded. Smotrich has previously stated his intention to extend Israeli sovereignty over the occupied territories, thwarting the creation of a Palestinian state. Israel has for decades been pursuing a maximalist policy of expansion in the West Bank. Now, many believe that under Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's current cabinet, the far-right elements are taking advantage of the war in Gaza to push their agenda further by annexing the whole area.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the United States, federal officials have found children working illegally overnight at meat processing plants. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Federal investigators have found nearly a dozen children to be working dangerous overnight shifts at Seaboard Triumph Foods' meat processing plant in Sioux Falls, Iowa, according to the Department of Labor. Employed by Guimon, Oklahoma-based sanitation contractor Quest, 11 children allegedly used corrosive cleaners to sanitize head splitters, jaw pullers, bandsaws, neck clippers, and other equipment at the Seaboard Triumph Food Facility from at least September of 2019 through to September of 2023, according to the Department of Labor. The Department of Labor issued the news on Friday, 29th of November. Federal law in the United States prohibits children and minors from working in meat processing plants because of increased risk of injury. Seaboard Foods is among the nation's biggest meat producers. In addition to Iowa, Seaboard Foods is a division of Seaboard Corporation, has operations in Colorado, Kansas, Missouri, Montana, Oklahoma, Texas, and Utah, and in Mexico, according to the company's website. Michael Lazzeri, the Midwest Region Administrator for the Department of Labor's Wage and Hour Division, said, "These findings illustrate Seaboard Triumph Foods' history of children working illegally in their Sioux Falls, Iowa facility since at least September of 2019. Despite changing sanitation contractors, children continue to work in dangerous occupations at this facility. Quest must now pay nearly $172,000 in child labor civil money penalties and take steps to prevent it from illegally hiring minors and children again. Quest and Seaboard did not return a request for comment. However, children under the age of 18 illegally employed in dangerous jobs in meat and poultry slaughtering and processing operations is not unique in the industry or to the Seaboard food plants in Sioux Falls, Iowa. Seaboard, in September of 2023, contracted Fayette Janitorial Services for sanitation work at its facility. After taking over the plant sanitation services contract, Fayette allegedly rehired some of the children previously employed by Quest. With the Somerville, Tennessee-based contractor earlier this year found to be employing 9 minors at the Sioux Falls plant, according to the Department of Labor. Fayette also allegedly hired 15 children as young as 13 years of age at a Purdue Farm processing plant in Accomack, Virginia, where a 14-year-old teenager was severely injured. Purdue terminated its contract with Fayette before the Department of Labor's court filing, according to the company. The development is part of the ongoing probe into whether migrant children are cleaning U.S. slaughterhouses. It also comes less than a year after the government fined another sanitation services provider $1.5 million for employing more than 100 children aged between 13 and 17 at 13 meat processing plants in 8 states. The Department of Labor launched this investigation after a published report detailed migrant children working overnight for contractors in poultry processing facilities on the eastern shore of Virginia. A New York Times magazine story last December detailed children cleaning blood, grease, and feathers from the equipment with acid and pressure hoses. The New York Times account included details of a 14-year-old boy who was maimed whilst cleaning a conveyor belt in a deboning area at a Purdue slaughterhouse in rural Virginia. The 8th grader was among thousands of Mexican and Central American children who have crossed the border on their own to work in dangerous jobs in the United States. But it's not only migrant children tasked with illegal and dangerous work. A 16-year-old high school student, Michael Schultz, died last summer after getting trapped in a machine at a Wisconsin sawmill. From an elevated water slide at a Jacksonville, Florida bench park to a sawmill in Clark Range, Tennessee, federal investigators are finding children across the country working illegal hours and performing risky, unlawful tasks. In May of this year, federal investigators found a 13-year-old girl allegedly working up to 60 hours a week on an assembly line in Luverne, Alabama. More recently, the Department of Labor found a Grand Rapids, Michigan window cleaning company had illegally hired three children to clean residential windows and gutters and to install Christmas lights, with one requiring surgery after suffering serious injuries after falling from a roof. Another Department of Labor case resolved last month involved children operating and cleaning a meat grinder and driving motor vehicles to deliver orders for a pizza restaurant in Iron River, Wisconsin. The Department of Labor's Wage and Hour Division oversaw 736 investigations, uncovering child labor violations affecting 4,030 children in fiscal year 2024. The U.S. Department of Labor website has also covered the same story and tells us more. The U.S. Department of Labor has found a second sanitation contractor at the Seaboard Triumph Food LLC facility that employed children to perform dangerous work during overnight shifts at its Sioux City, Iowa meat processing plant. Under a consent order and judgment approved by the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Iowa, on 27th of November 2024, Quest LLC must now pay almost $172,000 in child labor civil money penalties, hire a third party to review and implement company policies to prevent the employment of children in violation of the Fair Labor Standards Act, and establish a process for reporting concerns about the illegal employment of children. The judgment follows an investigation by the Department of Wage and Hour Division that found the Guymon, Oklahoma sanitation contractor employed 11 children to use corrosive cleaners to clean head splitters, jaw pullers, band saws, neck clippers, and other equipment at the Seaboard Triumph Food Processing Facility from at least September of 2019 through to September of 2023. Seaboard Triumph Food contracted Fayette Janitorial Services LLC in September of 2023 for sanitation work at its facility. In May of this year, the department entered into a consent order and judgment with Fayette after division investigators found the Somerville, Tennessee contractor employed nine children illegally at the Sioux City, Iowa meat processing facility. After Fayette took over the plant sanitation services contract, Fayette rehired some of the children previously employed by Quest. Federal law prohibits children under the age of 18 from being employed in dangerous jobs common in meat and poultry slaughtering, processing, rendering, and packaging operations. The U.S. Department of Labor is determined to end the illegal employment of children in our nation's workplaces, according to regional solicitor Christine Herry. Christine Herry added, "We are committed to using all strategies to stop and prevent unlawful child labor and holding all employers legally responsible for their actions. Children should never be hired to perform dangerous and prohibited tasks."
First methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is the way of life. a complete way. It's a complete way.
Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Dr. Shomali.
In Dua al-Nudba we say to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that you made a condition with the prophets. شرط عليهم الزهد في درجات هذه الدنيا الدنية وزخرفها وزبرجها. You made a condition with them. Allah said to the prophets, if you want to be my prophets, if you want to receive revelation from me, support from me, and to be acting as my instruments for guiding people, one major condition, maybe there are other conditions, but one major condition is you should not be attached to dunya. You should have ascetic life. شَرَطَ عَلَيْهِمُ الزُّهْدِ. You have to be zahid, you have to be ascetic. You cannot think of collecting worldly gains like, you know, money or power or position or fame. شَرَطَ عَلَيْهِمُ الزُّهْدِ فِي دَرَجَاتِ هَذِهِ الدُّنْيَا الدَّنِيَا. In different levels of dunya, you have to be remaining always detached and ascetic. وَزُخْرُفِهَا. There are attractions. You know, when something is coated with gold, this is called muzakhraf. Zukhruf means to coat with gold. Something which inside is not gold, but they put gold on it. You think it's gold, but it's not gold. It's just on the surface. Dunya on the surface is attractive. But when you go inside, you see it's very ugly. Daniya is mean. شَرَطَ عَلَيْهِمُ الزُّهْدِ فِي دَرَجَاتِ هَذِهِ الدُّنْيَا الدَّنِيَّ وَزُخْرُفِهَا وَزِبْرِجَهَا فَشَرَطُوا لَكَ ذَلِكَ. They said, yes, we accept this condition. وَعَلِمْتَ مِنْهُمُ الْوَفَاءَ بِهِ. And you knew that they are going to be loyal. It's not just they said, but they are not going to keep it. عَلِمْتَ مِنْهُمُ الْوَفَاءَ بِهِ. You knew that they are going to be loyal. فَقَبِلْتَهُمْ. So you accepted them. So when did Allah accept them? Allah didn't accept Prophet Muhammad in the age of 40. Allah accepted Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam even before he was born, because in his eternal knowledge he tested him and he knew what type of life he is going to have, so he accepted him in advance. فَقَبِلْتَهُمْ وَقَرَّبْتَهُمْ وَقَدَّمْتَ لَهُمُ الذِّكْرَ الْعَلِيِّ وَالثَّنَاءَ الْجَلِيِّ. So you accepted them, you brought them nearer to you, and you praised them in advance. You read stories about, for example, life of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. That, for example, even when he was in the womb of his mother, when he was just born, when he was a little kid, when he was a teenager, you see that there is a special care for him. You see things that are not ordinary. And you may say, still he's a child. Why he is so special? Why he receives so much care from Allah? Why Allah keeps him away from things which are not a sin because a child, but still are not good? Because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has accepted him based on what he is going to do himself. It's not arbitrary. but because Allah knows that what this person is going to do when he becomes responsible, when he becomes able to understand and distinguish between right and wrong, then even when he's a child, even before he's born, Allah supports him. So that in future, when he's going to act as a guide, there would be nothing bad attached to him. People would have no bad, negative memory of him. Even something that as a child you may do, and people may think about you in future, that as a child, you know, he made this bad thing. No. فَقَبِلْتَهُمْ وَقَرَّبْتَهُمْ وَقَدَّمْتَ لَهُمُ الذِّكْرَ الْعَلِيِّ وَالثَّنَاءَ الْجَلِيِّ وَأَحْبَطَّ عَلَيْهِمْ مَلَائِكَتَكَ. And you sent your angels to them. So, if I want to give you an example from our life, I can give example of a teacher who is very experienced. You know, if you are a teacher for 20 years, 30 years, if you have experience, if you have vision, you don't need to wait till end of the year, till final exam comes to realize, you know, who is a good student, who is a bad student. You don't need to wait till they become, I don't know, 20 or 30, till you say this person has a bright future or not. After few days, maximum few weeks, an experienced and insightful teacher can tell you which student is bright and hardworking and is going to have a bright future. And then, from before he actually proves himself, the teacher tries to be helping him more. If, for example, I know that this student of mine is going to become a great scholar because he has the talents and he's hardworking and he's very pious, then I don't wait for him to become a good scholar to help him extra. From now on, I can help him extra. I can make myself more available to him. I can give him my books. I can give him my notes. I can be asking other teachers also to help him. I say, this person is special. We have to help him. So, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, for all his servants, it's not only for Ahlul Bayt or only for the prophets, for all his servants, that he knows they are going to be later, when they become mature and responsible, they are going to be pious, they are going to be moral. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala helps them even from their childhood. Perhaps even before they are born. If their mother, when she's pregnant, is going to eat something unknowingly, which is haram, Allah may make the mother vomit because of this child, so that the child is not affected.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Adi عليم حالي حاكم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد صلي على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Thank you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Israeli regime said a Tayman detention facility is notorious for its brutal treatment of detainees. The prisoners are not only dehumanized, but subjected to continuous physical and psychological abuse. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Dr. Khaled Asser, a surgeon at the Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis, recently endured 6 months as a prisoner in the Zionist regime military court system. Prior to his seizure, he was in the midst of doing what he could to help during one of the worst humanitarian crises Gaza has ever seen. From the moment the war started, I did everything I could to help my people, Asser recalled during an interview in early October, adding, I couldn't think about my own safety when so many of my countrymen needed help. But in late March, Israeli regime forces stormed Nasser Medical Complex for the second time during this ongoing genocide. The Zionist regime troops forced medical staff, including Asser, to evacuate. Buzzing overhead, drones issued commands to leave the building. Despite wearing his white doctor's coat and his scope around his neck, clearly identifying him as a medical professional, Asser was kidnapped. He said, they made us strip our clothes and tied our hands and blindfolded us. He said, it was humiliating. But worse than that, they treated us like criminals. We were just doctors trying to save lives. The Zionist regime troops then took Asser and others to a nearby house, which had been turned into a military command center. There, he said, he and his colleagues endured 5 days of detention under brutal conditions. Asser said, they didn't give us any food for the first 4 days. And on the fourth day, in the evening, they brought us a small piece of bread and some cheese, barely enough to stay alive. Throughout the ordeal, the hands of the medical professionals remained tied, their eyes blindfolded, as they were subjected to aggressive interrogations and violent treatment, he recalled. After 5 days of torment, they were thrown into military jeeps, crammed together like sacks of vegetables, Asser said. They piled us on top of each other. They were treated worse than animals, and the soldiers sat on us, mocking and beating us the entire way to the detention facility at Sdr Tayman in the Naqab Desert. The Sdr Tayman detention facility, notorious for its brutal treatment of detainees, became Asser's new prison. He described how the prisoners were not only dehumanized, but subjected to continuous physical and psychological abuse. Asser said, they tied our hands and blindfolded us. We were not allowed to move, speak, or even look sideways. Any small movement resulted in savage beatings. ¶¶
One of the most harrowing aspects of the imprisonment was the sexual abuse and the use of excessive force against the prisoners, he said. He added, "They would beat us mercilessly. They even assaulted us sexually. They sprayed pepper spray on us. It was unspeakable." The treatment was a calculated attempt to break the prisoners physically and mentally. Asser said, "I saw them torture an elderly man just because he was moving his lips, reciting the Quran." The cruelty extended beyond physical pain, he pointed out. The prisoners were only allowed to bath once a week, and even then, the clothes given to them had been spat on by the soldiers. Asser said, "We had 2 minutes to shower, and after we were done, we had to wear filthy clothes they had wiped their feet on." Living conditions in Sedre Tamon were squalid. The facility infested by insects and rats. The detainees were forced to sleep on thin mats over rough concrete floors. Asser said, "The cold was unbearable, and we had no blankets to protect us. I lost 40 kilograms in those few months, barely surviving on a piece of toast and a small serving of jam or cheese every day. It wasn't enough to sustain a person." The prisoners were frequently beaten, especially those who defied the guards' arbitrary and oppressive rules. Asser said, "When the guards felt like it, they would storm the cell and demand that we lie face down with our heads to the ground. Those who disobeyed were beaten with truncheons. Some prisoners told me they were beaten on their body parts and electrocuted. They used any method they could to torment us." Amid international outcry over the abuse at Sedre Tamon, some prisoners, including Asser, were moved to Ofer prison in the occupied West Bank. Asser was transferred to Ofer prison in June. Though the conditions there were slightly better, the psychological and physical abuse continued. Amnesty International reported he was held there without charges or trial under the abusive unlawful combatants law. Asser said in Ofer, "The beatings were less frequent, but the humiliation never stopped. They didn't give us proper medical care. I had internal bleeding and wasn't seen by a doctor for over a month." Asser said that when he was finally given medication, it arrived 10 days after his hospital visit. The lack of food and medical treatment in Ofer prison mirrored the dire conditions at Sedre Tamon. After arriving at Ofer prison, Asser and his colleagues were sentenced by a military court. He said, "It was a sham trial conducted over the phone. We didn't even know the charges against us. They labeled us illegal combatants captured during the war, and we were given arbitrary sentences until the end of the conflict." What weighed most heavily on Asser during his imprisonment was the uncertainty surrounding his family. He said, "I was constantly worried about them, especially since they had been displaced during the war. I heard rumors of military operations near Rafah, where they were staying, and I feared the worst." Upon his unexpected release on September 30, likely because he was not considered a threat, Asser returned to work, determined to continue serving his people despite the trauma he had endured. But when he reunited with his family, they were living in the ruins of their house in Khan Yunis. He said, "We are a strong and resilient people." Reflecting on his experience, he said, "This isn't the end. It's a testament."
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with a large number of women from across the country. The meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on December 27, 2023. Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi said somewhere that it is a woman's duty to be involved in politics and to address the fundamental issues of the country. They have a right and a duty to be involved. So he made it obligatory for women to actively participate in shaping the country's destiny and to address the country's fundamental issues. And this itself has a long chapter continuing it, meaning there is no difference between men and women in these areas. Regarding being involved in the affairs of the society, it is said, whoever wakes up in the morning without caring about the affairs of the Muslim community is not a Muslim, addresses both men and women. When you wake up in the morning, whether you are a housewife, an office worker, an employee, or a craftswoman, whatever it is that you do, you must have the society in mind. You should care about the state of the society. Now, how much you can help and play a role may vary. Each person can play a role, and this effort is required for everyone. This action, effort, and caring is required for everyone. Gender does not matter here either.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Another example may be seen in the hadith. Whoever hears someone cry out, O Muslims, The woman who just spoke here said, the way is closed regarding the matter of Palestine and Gaza. Otherwise, we would have gone if we could have. For example, imagine this woman who is a doctor could have gone there and attended to the sick. the injured, the women, and the children. Everyone has their own role to play. But the important thing is that everyone must make an effort, have a duty, and should have a sense of responsibility regardless of whether they are male or female. Islam has stated these things clearly. These are the things that are clearly stated in Islam. As for duties within the family, men and women have different obligations. Each gender is assigned a different set of responsibilities according to the resources that are available to them, as well as their physical and mental abilities. This is where gender plays a role. Crying out for gender equality is an absolute form of wrong. Gender equality does not apply everywhere. In some places, yes, there is equality. But in other places, it is not possible or applicable. What is correct is to say gender justice. Gender justice is applicable everywhere. Justice means ensuring that everything is in its own place. The spiritual, physical, an emotional framework of a woman allows her to do certain things. Having children, taking care of them, and raising them is a responsibility specifically entrusted to women, as men are not capable of fulfilling this role.
I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite, words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat.